Walter confirmed proudly. Some have speculated that the expectation to carry on your legacy may have been a burden on the next generation of Pierces. She was only 27 years old, and her career was already mapped out. Now she was about to get married. Is it possible the pressure was too much? Do you think Amanda simply escaped and started a new life? When it comes to what happened to Amanda, I'm guessing just as much as anyone watching your show. But I want to say this, just in case there's any chance my daughter is watching. Please come home, sweetie. Even just a phone call to your mother so she knows you're okay. And if someone out there has our daughter, please, we will do anything, pay anything to get her back. Walter was on the verge of tears, and Lori could tell that Alex wished he didn't have to move on to the next question. Lori had to hope that all of this would lead to something good. I'm sorry to bring this up, Alex said, but since our show is about crime and the toll it takes on loved ones, it's worth mentioning that after 32 years of marriage, the two of you divorced a little more than 2 years ago. Did Amanda's disappearance contribute to the end of your marriage? Walter turned to Sandra. Do you want to take that one? He asked with a nervous smile. Walter and I never thought we'd be one of those divorced couples. We didn't believe in it. People used to ask us the secret to a long marriage, and Walter would say, neither one of us leaves. But yes, Amanda's disappearance changed us, individually and as a partnership. We were on separate paths. Walter wanted, no, needed, to get back to our normal life. He had his company to run, and we had two other children, plus our grandchildren, whose lives needed to continue. I try to move on for the sake of Henry and Charlotte, but I realize I've stayed frozen. I'll be in limbo until I find Amanda. That put an enormous strain on our marriage. Walter, Alex said quietly, is there anything you want to add to that? If you're lucky enough to live to our age, inevitably you'll have some regrets. My biggest one is making Sandra feel the way she just described. But the truth is, my life never went back to normal, and it never moved on. In my own way, I'm still in limbo too, Sandra, but alone. He looked at his ex-wife. Because here's the thing you never realized. I wasn't the tough one. You were. I couldn't walk with you on your journey to find Amanda because I wasn't strong enough. I didn't want to find out she was dead, and I couldn't take the thought of her resenting me so much that she'd leave the whole family behind. So I hid myself away in my work and pretended that we had to move on. But I'm not hiding anymore. I'm here with you and Henry and Charlotte, and I'm ready for the truth, no matter where it leads us. Lori gave a hand signal to the cameraman to stop shooting and let the room become quiet. She turned away as she saw Walter wipe a tear from his face. The Pierces deserved some semblance of privacy. It was a moment of silence for Amanda. 35. When Lori got back to her room, her father was sitting on the couch watching cable news. He hit the mute button on the remote control, and she kicked off her shoes and settled on the couch next to him. That was pretty heavy, she sighed. She and Leo had adjoining rooms, each with two beds. The door was open and she could see Timmy at his wee in Grandpa's room. Having watched Sandra and Walter's raw emotions about their missing daughter, she could only think again how blessed she was that her father was always there for them. Leo put his arm around her. I'm sure it was tough, but I think I have some good news for you. Your new lead, the man in the surveillance footage, may have paid off, and it's pretty interesting. As Lori waited, Leo got up and walked over to the desk in the corner of the room. Remember I mentioned that the photographer's intern had only one conviction? He asked. Sure, something about violating a court order. What did he do? Fail to show up for a traffic ticket? That wouldn't be nearly as intriguing as this. Leo's expression was serious as he handed her a manila file folder. Start with the first document. That's the court order in question. The header on the first page read Order of Protection. It was filed by Patricia Ann Munson and Lucas Munson, petitioners, against Jeremy Carroll, respondent. In the first paragraph, the court concluded that Carroll had caused the petitioners to suffer substantial emotional damage or distress by harassing them repeatedly with no legitimate purpose. The court order prohibited Carroll from being within 840 feet of the Munsons or intentionally contacting or communicating with them by any method whatsoever. This is a stalking order, Lori said, continuing to flip through the pages. Why 840 feet? That seems like a strange number.
The Munsons were his next-door neighbors. My guess is that was the number of feet from his front door to their property. The court can't force him to move from his home.
The next document was an affidavit from Lucas Munson, swearing to the allegations that formed the basis of the stalking order.
Whoa, Lori said. He sounds like a complete nut. No wonder some of the photography clients complained he couldn't respect boundaries.
She read quickly through the court papers. According to the Munsons, who were in their 60s, they initially appreciated Carroll's attempts to be neighborly. He would help them carry in the groceries and eventually began bringing them fresh vegetables from the farmer's market on weekends. But then they noticed his curtains moving when they were mowing the lawn or sitting on their back deck enjoying a cocktail at sunset. Twice, Lucas was certain that he had seen a camera lens between the parted drapes. When Lucas asked Jeremy whether he had been photographing them, he went inside and returned to the front porch with an album full of pictures. Patricia pruning her rose bushes, Lucas firing up the barbecue in the backyard, the two of them watching television on the sofa, visible through the living room window. Lucas was so stunned, he didn't know what to say and just left. Jeremy apparently took the lack of a negative response as approval and began leaving photographs of them on their front porch every Saturday, a small collection of what they thought were private moments. The final straw that led the Munsons to seek the protective order was when Jeremy started calling the Munsons Ma and Pa. When Lucas mustered up the courage to ask why, Jeremy's only explanation was, "I'm estranged from my biological parents." When she was finished reading, Leo handed Lori a printout of a very different kind of photograph, a mugshot. The man was holding a sign that read Jeremy Carroll, followed by his date of birth and the date of his arrest 5 months ago. Lori could tell from the height chart on the wall behind the suspect that Jeremy was 5'10". He had thinning brown hair and pale chubby cheeks. His shoulders slumped. This could definitely be the man I saw turn and follow Amanda on the surveillance tape, she said excitedly. I see he was convicted of violating the order.
It was a relatively minor violation. He left a framed photograph of a roseate spoonbill in their mailbox, along with a note apologizing for what he called a misunderstanding.
A roseate spoonbill? What the heck is that?
A bird. Sort of looks like a pelican. They're cute.
I won't ask how you knew that.
Timmy Googled it.
You don't even want to know the things I was imagining. A picture of a live bird? That doesn't sound so creepy.
Not in isolation. That's the whole point of stalking laws. Context matters. It really scared the Munsons. The judge wasn't cutting Jeremy any slack. He found him in contempt and sentenced him to 2 years of probation with an extension of the stalking order. He warned him that one more violation and he'd be in jail.
Dad, if this Jeremy guy thought he'd found surrogate parents in his next-door neighbors, what kind of relationship did he imagine with a stunning beauty like Amanda?
Lori had been so engrossed in the conversation with Leo that she was almost late for the next filming session. They were interviewing Amanda's brother, Henry, at the edge of the resort property, next to the ocean.
By the time she walked all the way there, the cameras were already situated, and a makeup technician was adding a final dash of powder to Henry's sunburned cheeks. Last night, Lori had sensed Henry's discomfort in formal wear. Her intuitions were apparently correct. Today he wore khaki pants and a short-sleeved camp shirt, and he seemed like an entirely different person than the man she'd met the previous night.
"Sorry I'm late," she whispered to Jerry, who was attaching a wireless mic to Henry's shirt collar.
"I knew you'd get here in time. You always do."
Henry fidgeted in his chair, as though trying to find a comfortable spot.
"Do you really think this show might help us find out what happened to Amanda?"
"No guarantees," Lori said, "but our two previous specials certainly paid off." Alex had also opted for a more casual look. Lori made a mental note that his green polo shirt brought off the color in his blue-green eyes.
"Is everything okay?" he asked.
Normally, Lori was the first person to show up on the set.
"All good. I hate to throw a curveball at you, but can you be sure to ask Henry about the wedding photographer and his intern, Jeremy Carroll? I'll explain it all later."
"Henry," Alex said once filming began, "can you start by telling us about the last time you saw your sister?" "It was right around 5 o'clock on Thursday. The eight of us, Amanda, Jeff, and the wedding party, had met with the photographer for a few informal shots around the property. When we were finished, we all went back to our rooms for some downtime and to get dressed for dinner."
"You joined Jeff and his college friends, Nick and Austin, at 8 o'clock, correct?"
"That's right. I thought it was sort of silly to split into separate bachelor and bachelorette parties, but I went along for the ride. With Nick and Austin involved, I was dreading some horrible antics involving scantily clad dancers, but Jeff insisted they keep the evening civilized."
"Yet you still turned in early for the night?"
Henry nodded.
"We had a newborn at home, so my wife didn't come. The highlight of my trip was sleeping uninterrupted all night. Besides, I was a bit of a hanger-on with the rest of the boys. The three of them were buddies, but I only knew Jeff. Basically, I was just there as Amanda's brother."
"You mentioned the photographer," Alex said.
"Is that Ray Walker?"
Henry shrugged.
"I don't remember his name, but he was super tall, like even taller than you, I think."
"Do you remember an intern who was with him? His name was Jeremy Carroll."
Lori smiled. Alex had a way of making every question seem like it had suddenly come to him off the top of his head. Henry squinted, and then a flash of recognition registered on his face.
"Oh, yeah, that guy. I do remember him. He was the one who came up with the idea of us all standing at the edge of the pool, pretending we were about to jump. The tall photographer gave the pictures to my parents afterward as a gift, and that one was my favorite."
"How long was the group with the photographers?"
"About 40 minutes.
"Did you happen to see them at the hotel after that?"
"No, but I wasn't really around. I was in my room until I met the other guys in the lobby a little before 8, and we took the jitney to the Steak and Fin restaurant next to the golf course. I left when they were ordering after-dinner drinks. I went back to my room and called it a night."
"You took the jitney?" Alex asked.
"Did any of you have rental cars?"
Lori was constantly impressed at how nimble Alex was in these interviews. Whether other members of the wedding party had access to cars was another detail that Lori should have thought of before production began, but Alex had caught it immediately with one mention of a bus.
"I didn't," Henry said, "and neither did Charlotte. But I know Amanda and Jeff rented a car. She wanted to be able to go shopping on Worth Avenue without bothering with cabs."
"Were you ever in the rental car?" Alex asked.
Henry nodded and then laughed.
"Believe it or not, the guys had to take a shopping trip, too. We all managed to forget something, a belt, socks, shaving cream. The four of us drove downtown Wednesday afternoon."
Just to be clear, was this the same car that was missing when Amanda disappeared?
"Yes, it was."
"Did anyone else in the wedding party have a rental car?"
"I don't think so."
"Okay. Returning to the subject of the photography intern, Did you notice anything unusual about him? Like what?
They always tried not to lead their witnesses, but in a cold case, it was often necessary to refresh a person's memory.
Did he maintain a professional demeanor during your interactions?
Yeah, I'd say so. But now that you mention it, I remember Kate saying that he was being a little too chummy.
How so? Alex asked.
Nothing striking, more like he was around our age, especially compared to the head photographer, and seemed interested in hanging out with us, like he was part of the gang or something. I didn't notice it, but I'm not exactly an expert on social etiquette.
You seem like an upbeat person, Alex said.
I like to think I am.
Is that part of the reason you wanted to go your own way and not work in the family business? I imagine that with siblings trying to run a company together, it could get a bit tense.
I went my own way because I like making wine more than ladies' foundational garments.
Henry made air quotes with his hands.
I can actually partake in the merchandise.
But you'd agree, wouldn't you, that there could be some rivalry between your sisters?
Lori could tell that Henry didn't approve of the question, but in Lori's short phone call to him last week, he had alluded twice to the work drama between his sisters. He couldn't deny it now.
All siblings compete for their parents' affections, and the way to my father's heart was always his business. And sure, everyone wants to be respected at work, and my sisters were no different.
But the rivalry didn't always cut both ways, did it? Alex asked.
Amanda was always more confident than Charlotte.
Is it fair to say that Charlotte could be jealous of Amanda at times?
Alex had slipped into cross-examination mode. He was in complete control.
I suppose.
Even angry?
At times.
In fact, didn't Charlotte resent the fact that your father allowed your sister to open a New York office and expand the company's operations, even though she expressed doubts about the idea?
Lori had gleaned that tidbit from Amanda's former assistant.
Yes, she was very upset, but if you're suggesting that Charlotte hurt our sister, you're crazy. See, that's why I didn't even want to do this stupid show.
We're not accusing anyone, Henry. We just want to get a better understanding.
Henry was pulling off his microphone.
You said I'm an upbeat person? That's because I call things how I see them, and this is what I see. You're pointing the finger at everyone Amanda knew and loved, when what you should be doing is tracking down the local creeps. I'm out of here.
Alex shrugged once they realized Henry wasn't coming back.
Sometimes that's going to happen.
Given the nature of her show, Lori was used to being accused of aiming her suspicions in the wrong direction, but this time Henry's words stung. Everyone they had brought here was someone Amanda loved enough to include in her wedding. Most murder victims were killed by someone close to them, but Amanda could have been hurt by someone she never knew before she came to this beautiful place. Maybe that someone was Jeremy Carroll. 37. Sitting in the resort's cocktail lounge, Lori perused the adventurous options on the list of signature drinks. According to the menu, they were all handcrafted by the resort's in-house mixologist. With the Art Deco surroundings, she felt like she had stepped into a speakeasy. She felt a gentle hand on her shoulder and looked up to see Alex. He gave her a quick kiss.
I hope you haven't been waiting long.
I just sat down myself. So, who won?
Alex and Leo had sneaked off to a nearby sports bar to watch the Yankee game on a big screen. Leo had vowed to stick to the heart-healthy diet he'd been following since having two stents inserted in his right ventricle last year, but Lori would bet her life that he'd been unable to resist a few chicken wings.
The Red Sox, Alex groaned. 9-1, a complete blowout. How was your mother-son dinner?
Excellent. Timmy ate an entire plate of spaghetti and meatballs, as well as half of my lasagna. My little boy has a very big appetite, and he's still pestering me about getting you to go on that water slide with him.
I'm happy to take him, Alex said. We could go early in the morning before we're shooting for the day. and ruin that perfect hair? First Grace, and now you, he grinned. As long as you think it's perfect.
A waitress arrived with two glasses of water and a tray of olives. Lori asked for a vodka martini, and Alex ordered a ginger ale.
Your father and I already knocked back a few, and you don't want my eyes puffy on camera tomorrow, do you?
He reached across the table and held Lori's hand. His hand was warm. It felt good.
I, on the other hand, was a teetotaler at dinner. When your date is a 9-year-old, you're the designated driver.
Switching topics, Lori said, is anything Henry said today about the rental car helpful to us?
Alex sighed. Not really. I bumped into Austin a little while ago in the lobby. He confirmed Henry's story about the four of them using the car to drive downtown. I assume Kate, Charlotte, or Megan will verify that the women in the bridal party used the car for a shopping trip, too.
I'll recheck the police report about the search of the rental car, Lori said. Jerry said there was no relevant evidence found there, but I'll make sure.
I reread it after the interview with Henry. He took a sip of his drink and chuckled. An older gentleman found the car 3 days after Amanda's disappearance and reported it to the police. When the police pressed him on what he was doing behind the abandoned gas station, he admitted he had to relieve himself and was concerned that he wouldn't make it home.
Lori smiled. What made him call the police?
He wasn't going to, but then he spotted a set of keys on the ground near the driver's side door. He assumed the car was stolen and abandoned and called 911 when he got home.
Any DNA or fingerprint evidence? Lori asked.
The police checked for both. They were able to lift prints belonging to Amanda and Jeff from the steering wheel. They cross-checked Amanda's prints against some personal items from her room. Jeff volunteered his. Both had driven the car, so the results weren't surprising. The DNA trail also didn't lead anywhere. All 6 members of the wedding party had been in the car, so finding their DNA wouldn't tell us anything. And remember, this was a rental car. Even though it would get a quick wipe and vacuuming between uses, it would be loaded with the DNA of previous occupants. The police checked the DNA samples they found against their database of sex offenders, but didn't find any matches.
So the car tells us nothing, Lori said.
That's not exactly true, Alex replied. If they had found blood or clumps of hair, that would have suggested a struggle took place, but they didn't. And one more thing. The night before the car was found, it had rained really hard. Footprints that might have been made by Amanda or anybody who was with her, or potential tire tracks from another car, would have been washed away.
A dead end, Lori sighed.
Oh, don't look now, but we have company at the bar, Alex said in a low voice.
Lori stole a glance to the front bar. Austin and Nick were drinking what looked like scotch. Their heads turned in sync as a group of young women in cocktail dresses walked by.
Looks like they're on the prowl, Lori said.
It sure does.
Think they'll mind if I interrupt? I want to ask them if they remember Jeremy Carroll.
I was thinking about him this afternoon, Alex said. I bet the police have never connected him to Amanda.
I'm sure they haven't. The photographer, Ray Walker, didn't think of it himself until Jerry called him. It was only after Amanda disappeared that any clients complained about Jeremy. And the neighbors didn't seek a protective order until last year. There would be no way for the police to realize that Jeremy had been working on Amanda's wedding photographs.
Have you considered approaching him for the show?
We certainly can't ignore him. If only there were some way to know if he was the man who turned to follow Amanda in the surveillance photo. Let me see what Nick and Austin remember.
Want me to go with you?
Alex asked, beginning to stand.
No, I think you intimidate them. Too much competition for best-looking man at the Grand Victoria.
He was smiling as he watched her walk away.
Ms. Moran, Nick exclaimed. Let us get you a drink.
Lori noticed that Austin did not look happy at the suggestion that she join them. Hers was probably not the kind of female company he was hoping for tonight.
Please call me Lori,
And thank you, but I already have one. She gestured to Alex, who gave a small hand salute. I don't want to interrupt for long, but something's come up in our investigation. Do you happen to remember a younger man who was working for Jeff and Amanda's wedding photographer? His name was Jeremy Carroll.
The intern, Austin said immediately. Kind of a nosy, nondescript fellow. He took good pictures, as I recall.
So you do remember him?
Austin remembers everyone, Nick said. He's the Rain Man of people watching. Me, on the other hand, I don't even remember there being a wedding photographer.
Austin launched into a detailed description of the photo shoot by the swimming pool the afternoon of the bachelor party, but Nick's face was still blank.
Did you notice anything unusual about him? Lori asked.
Are you thinking he might be a suspect?
Austin asked, his voice tense.
We've been telling people all these years that there's no way Jeff would hurt Amanda. Henry said from the beginning she probably went for a walk and ran into a dangerous creep. Is it possible this intern's the one?
At this point, we're just trying to make sure we have a complete list of people Amanda would have encountered down here.
Come to think of it, the guy did seem very interested in everyone, Austin said. I thought he was just too eager, the way interns can be.
Did he seem especially interested in Amanda?
Yes, I think so.
His voice was deeply concerned now.
That seemed normal at the time. After all, she was the bride. Maybe someone should have mentioned it to the police.
It's a big leap from being overly interested in your job to hurting someone. She saw no reason to mention Jeremy's more recent problems with the law. Nick downed the rest of his scotch and signaled for the bill.
Is that all we can help you with for now, Lori?
They were clearly eager to move on to more fun conversations with more available women.
Just one more question while I have you here. We were trying to clarify who had access to rental cars that week. Jeff and Amanda rented a car. Did either of you have one?
No, only Jeff had one. On this trip, we're yacht people, Nick said with a smirk at his own joke.
Austin began to tell Lori in agonizing detail about their newfound love for boats and putting their Ladies First and Lonesome Dove nameplates on their charters.
So is that it? Nick asked.
Lori had the impression that he either needed to leave right now or would be ordering another drink.
Yes, and please, let me get this, she said, reaching for the tab. It's the least I can do.
Nick placed a gentle hand on her forearm. He certainly was a flirt.
I hate to break this to you, Lori, but you've been picking up more tabs than that one. We've put everything on our rooms.
Brett Young will be so thrilled, Lori thought. 38.
How'd that go?
Alex asked when she returned to the table. She related the new information to him. As usual, he processed it quickly.
So that's one more person saying Jeremy Carroll is a little off.
Jeff, Austin, and Nick had all given the same timeline to police. According to the three friends, after dinner, they went to Jeff's room for a nightcap. Around 11 o'clock, they said goodnight, and Nick and Austin went to their own rooms and to bed.
Alex, think about this. All four men supposedly were in their hotel rooms alone by 11 o'clock. Henry claims that he went to bed earlier, close to 10 o'clock. That means that nobody can confirm the whereabouts of those four after 11, the night Amanda disappeared.
Yes, it does, Alex agreed.
And it was about 11 o'clock when Amanda stepped back from getting on the elevator.
Do you think she was meeting one of the four?
I don't know. And the question is, was Jeremy hanging around the hotel at that time? If so, he could have seen Amanda and followed her again.
I know your father found Jeremy's address, and it's not far from here.
That's where my mind was going. After the shoot tomorrow, I want to pay a visit to Mr. Carroll.
Lori, please don't tell me you're planning to go alone.
Don't worry.
Armed Commissioner Leo will be going with me. That makes me feel better.
Switching to another subject, can you and I have dinner tomorrow night?
There's a new gourmet restaurant in town that I hear is wonderful.
Really? Just the two of us?
Over a romantic dinner, you can tell me about your meeting with Jeremy Carroll.
Lori laughed and said, What could possibly be more romantic? You're on.
Half an hour later, they were walking to the elevator. Lori found herself thinking about Jeremy Carroll. Her gaze drifted to the now dark atrium outside the bar. She could picture Carroll lurking there, his camera strapped across one shoulder. She imagined Amanda walking past him that night, never noticing that the young photographer was watching her and following her.
39. Jeremy Carroll's neighborhood, a mix of ranch style and bungalow homes, was modest but well maintained. The one exception was his address. The split-level ranch was in dire need of both a paint job and a lawn mowing. According to his neighbor's application for a restraining order, Jeremy had inherited the home 3 years earlier from his great aunt. Lori paused on the sidewalk.
Now that we're here, I'm worried that we should have called the local police instead.
I was on the job 3 decades, Lori. I know police work. If we took our suspicions to the police department here, they'd spend the entire day mulling things over. They'd probably even call in an assistant district attorney for advice. Jeremy would lawyer up the second they started asking questions about Amanda. But we're just a couple of civilians from a New York City television show. We can use that to get him talking.
Is it safe to just walk up there and knock on the door?
While I'm around, we're fine.
Lori saw Leo's hand reach inside his jacket to where he kept his gun. After all those years with the department, he felt unnatural without it. Lori felt her heart start to race as her father rang the doorbell. Were they about to look into the face of Amanda's killer? As the door slowly opened, she immediately recognized Jeremy from his booking photo. He even had the same trapped, fearful expression.
What are you doing here?
On instinct, Lori looked at his hands and clothing to see if he might be armed. His hands were empty, and he was wearing a t-shirt and sweatpants, not ideal for concealing a weapon. She felt her pulse begin to return to normal. But then her gaze moved past Jeremy into his home. A worn brown sofa and an old television were the only furniture in the living room. Past that, she saw a small table and 2 chairs in what was meant to be a dining room. Despite the paucity of furniture, the house was cluttered beyond belief. Old computers, video equipment, and printers were scattered in random places. Stacks of magazines and newspapers stood 5 feet high, and everywhere Lori looked, there were photographs, on the floor, strewn across the table, pinned to the walls, lining the stairwell. Her eyes widened as she looked at Leo. He took the lead.
We're with Fisher Blake Studios and wanted to talk to you about your photography work.
It was a smart move. The name of their show would put Jeremy on high alert. Fisher Blake Studios sounded like a photography company. Even so, Jeremy looked wary.
I've sent my work to every major photographer in southern Florida. I've never heard of you, Mr. Blake. Oh, I'm not Mr. Blake. My name's Leo.
He offered a handshake.
This is Lori, and we're not local. We're from New York.
Jeremy's eyes lit up at the mention of the Big Apple, then immediately lowered as Leo handed him a still photograph from the Grand Victoria surveillance video. Lori could tell that he recognized himself. There was no doubt in her mind. Jeremy was the man she had spotted walking behind Amanda at 5:30 the night she disappeared.
This is from the Grand Victoria Hotel, Leo stated. See the date stamp at the bottom of the picture? Do you remember that night?
Jeremy nodded slowly. He wasn't denying being the man in the security video.
Ray Walker, the photographer who hired you, told us that the two of you had finished taking pictures at 5 o'clock. But you were still there a half hour later with your camera. And when you saw Amanda, you changed your direction to follow her. We have the whole thing on film.
I don't understand. Who are you?
Lori decided that it might be best to let Jeremy experience a bit more fear and told him they were from Under Suspicion, investigating Amanda Pierce's disappearance. Can we come in? She stepped inside without waiting for a response, and Leo followed her. She was no longer afraid. This man was a coward, finding power in the shadows behind a camera. He was not going to lash out with her father around.
Why didn't you tell the police that you saw Amanda after you and Walker finished taking pictures?
Leo demanded.
Because nobody asked me if I'd seen her, and I knew if I told them, they'd suspect me. Everybody always suspects me.
You like taking pictures when people aren't looking. Lori gestured to all the photographs strewn around his house. Even at a superficial glance, she could tell that most were taken with long-distance lenses, their subjects unaware of the stranger watching them.
It's my art. I don't photograph flowers or landscapes. I photograph people, and not when they're posed and artificial. I capture their reality. Isn't that what everyone really wants? Look at all the selfies posted all over the internet. People love having their picture taken. Even your neighbors, Leo said. They didn't seem happy with your art.
That was all a misunderstanding. I tried to explain. Once I realized they were offended, I got rid of all my images of them. It wasn't right to keep them.
What about Amanda? Lori asked. Do you have pictures of her? Ones she didn't know about? Lori walked to the dining room and began rifling through the photographs spread across the table.
Stop it!
Jeremy's voice was booming. Leo lunged in Lori's direction, placing himself between her and Jeremy.
Please,
Jeremy said, lowering his voice.
You need to go now. You have no right to be here. You're trespassing. Get out.
Lori looked to her father for guidance.
I'll call the police if you don't leave, Jeremy threatened.
Leo took Lori's hand and led her to the front door. They had no choice. Dad, she said once they were safe in the car, he has photographs of Amanda. I could feel it. He's going to destroy them now.
No, he won't, Leo said grimly as he started the engine. They mean too much to him. They're his mementos.
40. Alex embraced Lori when she walked into his suite.
I didn't want you to know how worried I was, but thank God you're both back in one piece. How did it go? What was he like?
Lori sat on the sofa and pressed her hands to her face.
Scary. Major creep, Leo said. Seriously off.
He's living like a hoarder, Lori explained. Floor-to-ceiling photographs everywhere. It was like something out of a horror movie. When I pressed him about whether he had pictures of Amanda, he threw us out of the house. Dad, should we call the police now?
And tell them what? Leo said. We don't have any evidence. But I'm telling you, he's the guy, the one the police missed all those years ago. Tying him to the case is a big breakthrough.
I don't understand, Alex said. You just said you don't have any evidence. How can you be so sure he's guilty?
Leo shook his head.
Sometimes I forget you're a defense attorney. Trust me, we were the ones who were there. Jeremy Carroll knows something. Leo, with all due respect, that doesn't mean he's guilty. I see clients all the time who get railroaded by police simply because they were nervous or were trying to protect some harmless secret. No one's railroading anyone.
Okay, please, don't argue, Lori pleaded. Alex, Dad's right. You weren't in that house. There's no question that Jeremy's...
She paused, searching for the word.
A weirdo. And he didn't even deny being the man in that video. He turned around to follow Amanda, and he's been convicted of stalking people.
But you're suggesting he did something far worse, Alex pointed out.
Lori turned to her father. Dad, Alex is right that until we have solid evidence, we shouldn't leap to conclusions.
So what do you want to do? Alex asked.
It's up to you.
Dad, Lori began slowly, based on your experience, you don't think Jeremy will make a run for it or destroy evidence if we don't move against him right now?
Leo shrugged.
You never know. But if the guy can't throw out old newspapers, I don't think he'll dump pictures he's been holding on to for more than 5 years. And that house is probably his only asset. He's not the type who can hop on a jet and live a fugitive lifestyle on the other side of the world.
And keep in mind, Alex said, just because he might know something about Amanda's disappearance doesn't mean he was involved.
Lori nodded. What do you think about this? Jerry can call him and try to smooth things over. He can say that we're reaching out to everyone who was at the Grand Victoria that weekend and didn't mean to invade his privacy. That might calm his nerves.
Good idea, Alex said.
And Alex, none of us want to rush to judgment. We'll keep an open mind for now, but that makes it all the more important that we hold everyone else's feet to the fire. Don't go easy on anyone.
I have no intention of going easy on anyone.
There was a glint in Alex's eyes.
Next up is Megan. I can't wait to hear how she wound up marrying her best friend's fiancé,
Lori said, as she stood up and headed for the door. 41.
Are you almost ready, Ms. White? We have the cameras set up with the current light, and the shadows can change quickly outside.
Megan White held up one finger. She would have finished by now if she could have gotten a better phone signal. When she told Jeff that she would be part of this awful show, she assumed they'd have plenty of notice to make arrangements with work. Instead, they'd been hauled down here on the spur of the moment, as if Megan could put her entire caseload on hold with the push of a button. She was doing her best to telecommute, but hotel Wi-Fi connections were infamously insecure, so she had created her own using her cell phone's hotspot. She watched the progress bar move slowly on the download of this appellate brief. The production assistant, was his name Jerry? Was obviously getting antsy. She wanted to tell him if time was of the essence, they should have filmed inside.
Just another second, I promise.
When the download was finally complete, Megan closed her laptop and followed Jerry to the set of rattan furniture Lori Moran had arranged on the promenade behind the main building. She resisted the temptation to wipe all the makeup off her face. The woman who caked it on had promised her that she would look natural on camera, but to Megan, it felt as though she were wearing a layer of mud. She had stopped arguing when the makeup artist said,
"You don't want to look washed out on the screen. It makes people look scared."
Megan was scared, but she didn't want to look that way. She asked for a little more blush. Lori Moran, the woman who had been hounding her on the telephone for the previous week, seemed amiable enough, but Megan thought she had noticed a hint of sarcasm in the producer's voice when she said she was happy to finally meet in person. Megan was more nervous about going toe-to-toe with Alex Buckley. His cross-examination skills were well known. Her laptop tucked away, she no longer had an excuse for delay.
Okay, she said to herself. Let's do this, and then Jeff and I can go home and move on with the rest of our lives.
The minute they were past introductions, Alex Buckley began by asking Megan to explain the timing of her courtship with Jeff. He clearly isn't pulling any punches, Megan thought. He's going for the jugular.
You had to have known that some people would disapprove of your starting a relationship with him when Amanda, his fiancée and your best friend, was still missing.
Megan had practiced her answer hundreds of times, but now that she was here, all she could think about was those hot lights and cameras pointing at her. She had worked so hard to avoid all this attention. She managed to make it through her memorized response.
We were both as surprised as anyone, Alex.
You've told people over the years that you were the one to reintroduce Amanda and Jeff.
That's right, at a coffee shop in Brooklyn. Amanda loved their bagels, she said sadly.
But you didn't intentionally get them together, did you?
He asked in a sympathetic tone.
Isn't it true that Jeff just happened to bump into you?
Yes, I guess that's right.
In fact, weren't you romantically interested in Jeff all the way back in college?
She shrugged.
College crushes come and go.
So you did have a crush. And then you were excited when you both ended up in New York after law school, and he invited you out.
Yes, I suppose I was.
And were you the one to tell him you didn't want to see each other anymore? Or was that his decision?
It wasn't like that. We didn't even have that discussion. We just never went out on a third date.
And is that because Jeff didn't invite you?
Sure, I guess.
Megan could feel the implication in the pause that followed. The show had scored a point at her expense. All these years, she had allowed people to think that she played Cupid between Amanda and Jeff. Would everyone see the truth now? Would they know that she had loved Jeff all along? That she had sobbed for hours after Amanda called her the day after the coffee shop run-in to say that Jeff had invited her to dinner? Megan had known instantly that she had lost her shot. She never could compete with Amanda. Now in desperation, she tried to turn the tables on her interrogator.
Have you ever heard of tunnel vision? She blurted. Let me explain it. It's when an investigator gets suspicious of one person and views all the evidence through that lens. I could point to any person in the wedding party and start raising questions. It doesn't mean any one of us is involved. Take Kate, for example. On the night Amanda disappeared, she said she had too much to drink and needed to go to her room. But when I went to check on her, there was no answer, even though I banged on the door. In the morning, she claimed not to have heard the knocking, even though Kate is the lightest sleeper I've ever met. In college, she would wake up if someone played a CD two rooms away. Do I know where Kate was that night? Not really. But did Kate have anything to do with Amanda's disappearance? I'd bet my life she didn't. Are you going to play gotcha with all of us? Are you trying to make us all look guilty?
Megan felt like she had made a valid point, but realized the producers could always edit anything they didn't like. By the time they were done with their creative splicing, she might come across like a defensive lunatic. Alex shifted gears.
Did you threaten to sue Amanda for stealing a product idea from you?
Megan's worst fears were coming true. Well, not her very worst fears, but she knew this interview was not going well. She felt even more nauseous than she'd become accustomed to in the past week. How in the world did they even know about the fight at the Lady Form offices? She thought Amanda's disappearance had long ago overshadowed their argument. It must have been Charlotte. That woman never forgot a grudge.
I didn't threaten her, but I did let her know my feelings were hurt. Back in college, the two of us came up with a trick to hold our keys and our iPods while we were working out. We sewed neoprene pockets onto our exercise clothes. It kept the contents dry and tucked snugly into place. Plus, we thought it was pretty cute. When I saw Lady Form's Extreme collection in stores, I was so upset that I went to Amanda's office. We argued over whose idea it was. I thought it was mine, or at least a joint idea. She insisted the real work and the ownership was hers and the company's. In my opinion, if she didn't think she was doing anything wrong, she would have told me in advance.
You were screaming loudly enough that people could hear you all the way down the hall. Did the fact that Amanda was going to marry a man you were still interested in add to your anger?
Megan was beginning to regret not trying to dissuade Jeff from coming here. Now she was trapped. She had no choice but to keep talking.
I admit, the argument in her office was heated, but she called me the next day. We met for lunch. She explained all the design work and experimentation that had gone into turning our simple little trick into a breakthrough product. She apologized for not telling me in advance, and I told her she could make it up to me by paying for the very nice bottle of champagne we were drinking and sending me a box full of free workout clothes.
She smiled at the memory.
In the end, it was a minor snit between friends, and it was over the same lunch that we had the conversation I always go back to. It's the reason I truly believe that Amanda left this hotel on her own.
Alex leaned forward. Megan prayed that he would believe her. She had never told anyone this before, except Jeff. Amanda's illness fundamentally changed her. She told me that she would no longer do things only out of loyalty or obligation. She was going to live for herself. It was the reason for not giving me credit for Xtreme. In her heart, she didn't believe I deserved it, so sharing credit with me would diminish her own accomplishment.
And how does that relate to her disappearance? Alex asked.
She was so different than the Amanda I knew before she was sick. In retrospect, I think she was trying to tell me she was no longer going to be the good girl, the good daughter, the good friend, the good wife. She wanted freedom, and she wanted power, and she didn't want to feel guilty for being the strong, independent woman she'd grown to be. But she couldn't do all those things in the shadow of her family and friends, and her impending wedding.
Friends have said that you were less frantic than everyone else when she disappeared. Why didn't you tell anyone this before?
In time, I did tell Jeff, but it didn't feel right saying it to anyone else. I felt like I was criticizing her, as if I was saying cancer made her selfish. Doesn't that sound terrible? But that's not how I saw it. I was happy for her. I thought she had found a way to start over again. That's why I didn't feel guilty when Jeff and I became closer. Do you know that the wedding bands were missing? She had been hoping to surprise Alex, but he was ready for the question.
Yes, Jeff explained that he did not realize the rings were missing until he got back to New York. He admitted he was careless about always locking the hotel safe. He thinks an employee could have stolen them.
For the first time since she took her seat, Megan felt like she had the upper hand. Did they really believe that the rings happened to disappear along with the bride? What a coincidence that would be, she said, and I bet if you check, theft is extremely rare here. These are excellent jobs. I can't imagine the employees would take the risk.
So what is your theory? Alex asked.
I always thought Amanda took them as a memento. She may have wanted a new life, but she did love Jeff. I just loved him more, and that's not a crime.
She looked directly into the camera.
Amanda, I'm happy, and I hope you are too.
That was the best Megan could do. When Jerry removed her microphone, it felt as though he had lifted a 30-pound weight from her chest. She wanted to go home.
Please, Jeff, she thought to herself. Let's just go home. I have something to tell you.
42. If you believe that woman, I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you, and it's made of gold. Grace pointed a French manicured index finger for emphasis. The team was meeting in the living room of Alex's suite, rehashing the interview with Megan. It was the first time they had ever gone directly on camera without first having a more wide-ranging conversation off camera. Jerry and Grace had wildly different impressions of Megan.
You're so cynical, Jerry told Grace. She struck me as very straightforward. I believe that's what both of Amanda's siblings told us to expect. She's unemotional, matter of fact. Everything she said seems credible to me.
Grace looked as though she wanted to jump out of her skin as she waited for Jerry to finish.
You could tell she memorized every last word. Even her pauses seemed rehearsed.
That doesn't mean she's lying, Jerry retorted.
No, but it does mean she thought she had something to hide. The only question is whether Alex got her to come clean or if there's more to learn. At the very least, that woman's been lying over the years about her feelings for Jeff. She didn't reintroduce him to Amanda, at least not intentionally. My guess is she wishes they'd never bumped into each other at that coffee shop. I bet she was pining for Jeff since college. Maybe that's even why she went to New York after law school and just happened to live near him in Brooklyn.
Lori was following the conversation, but was distracted by her own thoughts about Megan. Alex adjusted his black-rimmed glasses after tipping them up to review his